Welcome to Politics on Reality Radio. I'm Joshua Holland. This week we'll speak with Elon James White. He's the host of A Black Show, and he's down in Ferguson, Missouri. He's going to give us the scoop from the ground down there. Then we'll be joined by Dr. Zoom, who is a managing editor at Wonkit.com. He's also a blogger and a funny guy. What a craptastic week. I've been really disturbed by what's going on in Ferguson. And then in L.A., we had a report this week of an unarmed young black man with mental disabilities who was, according to witnesses, and with the usual caveats that we don't know, not all the facts are in, allegedly killed by police while he was on the ground, helpless, and being beaten by them. Neighbors say the same officers knew he had cognitive disabilities and had harassed him earlier in the week. He would be, I believe, the fourth unarmed black man killed by police in the last month. Meanwhile, all of this always elicits just a huge torrent of racism. My Facebook and Twitter feeds are just filled with bile. The conservative media is impossible to read right now. Now, Texas Governor Rick Goodhair Perry was indicted on two charges this week. Basically, he was charged with abusing his power. This should cheer me up. This should make me feel better. But I think the case is kind of weak. If you haven't paid attention, the district attorney of Travis County, Texas, Rosemary Lemberg, is one of the few Democratic office holders with any statewide power. Her office covers the capital, Austin, so statewide corruption probes are within her bailiwick. Perry wanted her out of office. He wanted to replace her with a Republican. He vetoed the funding for the entire Travis County DA's office in order to push her out, so he is charged with using his power to coerce her to resign. You know, again, I'd be cheered by this news normally, but the problem is that Lemberg got busted driving with three times the legal amount of alcohol in her blood. She was very drunk. She wasn't just like, you know, a little bit tipsy or had a glass of wine with dinner and then drove home. So honestly, she's not a terribly sympathetic protagonist. If you take away your partisan or ideological leanings, I mean, who wants a DA who gets trashed and then is stopped driving, who gets busted drunk driving in such an extreme way? Then the case itself, it seems thin as it is. At heart, it's a separation of powers issue in a sense, because Perry clearly has the power to veto what he wants as governor. I mean, he is not allowed to abuse that power, but I think that that's a very high bar that prosecutors have to clear, because it is clearly within his power. So my guess is that it isn't going anywhere. Maybe I'm wrong, but it will make Perry a martyr to the right, and it will probably help his fundraising and boost his popularity with the conservative base. He's going to spin this as the quote-unquote criminalization of politics, and I would say he's likely to get away with it. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, we have a big show, so let's take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with Elon James White. Stay tuned.
go? Where did you go? Out in the fridge, I left the beer and I played a tape I couldn't hear. Emptiness began to grow and I wondered, man, where did you go? Watch the sun come up from the back stairs. Thought about the last few years. I lost control, I screamed, I cried, I put the bullet and waited. Tried to pack my things and called a friend. Wish the symphony's would end. Wrote a note, then tore it up. Pulled the beer into a cup. Sat on the couch, drank it slow. Wondering, where did you go? I realized I couldn't stay. Grabbed my things and went away.
Back to the show. I'm very excited to have on my next guest. Elon James White is a writer. He's a comedian. He's a media mogul. He's the host of a black show. He's also the media director for Netroots Nation. Elon, welcome to Politics and Reality Radio.
Thank you for having me, sir.
Now, you are in Ferguson, Missouri. You have been there. When did you get down there?
We got down here Wednesday afternoon.
Wednesday afternoon. Okay. Set the scene. Tell us what you saw during that first night of protests, which was, I think, the craziest of them.
By the time I got here, there had been a few nights already of madness in Ferguson. And so we were actually trying to get in there a little bit early to see what's going on. So we got there after trying to catch one press conference, missing that. So we drove straight in. And this was around 5:30, 5:45. And when we got in, when we got to Ferguson, there was nothing but police checkpoints all around Ferguson. So you couldn't actually drive in unless you were a resident of Ferguson. So we parked a car and we just went on foot inside. And we went basically straight up West Florissant to get to where the bulk of the protesters were. Once we got, when we got about maybe about a half a mile to, no, about three quarters to a mile in, that was when we hit the police barricade. And
I was just going to ask. So this is the night that multiple reporters were arrested. I believe there were two politicians who are local politicians, a state senator and an alderman from St. Louis, who were also arrested. And I was following you on Twitter, and you were running through people's backyards to get places. Tell us about what you experienced as the night went on.
Right. And so as we hit that first police blockade, we were I've never seen such a thing. Like it was full on SWAT shields, armored cars, like snipers on top of the cars, and there was a hard line made around against the protesters. And then beyond the line, we saw the big crowd, and I actually posted a clip of it on Instagram. And when I realized that crowd wasn't protesters, those were just more cops, and so they weren't even like there were children trying to get in because they live that way. And the cops wouldn't let children pass that lived right beyond the border. And it wasn't like you could just easily walk around. There was police blockades everywhere. So my team and I were trying to figure it out, and we found a backyard to try to jump over. And basically that's how people were moving around the cops. We're going through people's backyards so that they could and jumping over gates, because that's the only way you could move through Ferguson with any type of reasonableness. And so once we jump over to the next block, it was shocking because It wasn't the war zone that we just walked over from. It was children playing basketball and people on their front yard or whatever. And so all of a sudden you go into, it's like this night and day area, and we walk up, and as we get to the end of the block, we see some folks that were coming from the protests as well. And when we turn, that's when you hit the wall of police yet again. But this time we're now on the inside of the police's, I almost refer to it as a quarantine, because that's almost how it felt.
The perimeter.
And so when we get in, we see more armored trucks, more snipers. I took pictures of these and posted them. And the people there aren't. It's not even like they're they're yelling or anything like that. And the there are people that they're actually through loudspeakers telling people, go back to your vehicles, go home, you must disperse, you have to go home. But then they would follow it up with, your right to assemble is not being denied. And it was like,
that was bizarre. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't understand what was happening with it. And so there was this one young lady, which it like I told everyone that it's kind of it haunts me a little bit, because this one young lady who because there was cars could go down the road that we had walked up after we went around the police barricade from the neighborhood. There were cars still coming in, but they couldn't turn down West Florissant anymore, so they had to go the other way. But the cops weren't saying anything. There was no one out there directing it. So this one young woman was like, "Well, fine, if they're gonna sit here and just stare at us, I'll do their job." And she was trying to like get people to cops to move over. Get the cars to turn the other way. And then the cops decided that they were gonna like move forward. They were taking ground. And I think that's the most I could say, because it wasn't just containment. They were literally pushing people further up West Florissant, up the road. And all of a sudden, this woman just like she just got tired, and she didn't do anything. She didn't yell. She didn't throw anything. She was standing there, and they were like, "You have to move. You have to move." And she was just like, "No." And her cousin starts like crying and like, "No, come on. We gotta go. We can't. They're gonna arrest you. They're gonna arrest you." And she's like, "No. I'm not moving." And then there's two older women in the community go up to her, and like they're like holding her arms and saying, "Please, they're serious." And within seconds of that, there's a picture of it. Like, and within seconds of that, they just engulf her. Like, not like one cop, not some "Ma'am, can you come over here?" Like 5-6 cops just take this woman in, and she's unarmed. She's not yelling. She's not even. She was just standing there, and they decided that she was no longer allowed to stand there because they were taking ground from the protesters, even though there was probably a good 100 to 200 yards between the cops and the protesters at this point, and they just marched on them. And that's the footage that that I started posting of them like basically marching on the group with dogs and the sniper rifle dudes, and it was crazy.
Now, Elon, we know that when black people do certain things, it's a riot. When white people do it, it's described differently. We're talking on Friday afternoon. On Thursday, yesterday, the St. Louis County Police that had been armed for war was relieved for duty and replaced by the Missouri Highway Patrol officers who left their armored personnel carriers and their body armor at home. The environment between last night and the night before was just night and day. It was calm and uneventful. Now, we've heard a lot about the riots. I covered the Occupy Oakland protests. What I saw happen on many occasions is that you'd have this peaceful crowd, and, you know, they were angry. You don't go to a protest if you're not angry about something. But they were peaceful, and these police in their heavily militarized gear would do those things that you're describing. They would randomly decide to cut off this block or take this ground. And what I saw was the tensions just being ratcheted up until someone in the crowd threw a water bottle or something. Then the tear gas and the rubber bullets came. So the police were technically correct when they said that they only used those weapons after someone had thrown a bottle. But the reality is that their choice of crowd control tactics, not the protesters' choice, but the police department's tactics, led directly from what had been a peaceable march to what you could call a riot. Is that the sense you got speaking to people down in Ferguson, or were they so angry that things would have gotten out of hand either way?
No, this was absolutely the issues of the cops, because as you said, last night I was in Ferguson. I hung out in Ferguson for hours last night because if you've ever seen a space liberated from their occupiers, that response, that just like people like just jubilant, if you will, and it was like a block party when we got through, because like it was a lot of traffic getting in because there was no cops this time, because like from the day before when there was nothing but cops, now I didn't even see one cop. And we're coming in, and like all of a sudden the groups of people inside are like greeting us, like they knew us by name because we have been covering this, and just like coming up to hug us, and like it was just a completely different world than we were before.
And there were no arrests last night.
No,
no police calls at all. So, you know, we've had 5 days of so-called civil unrest. But I think that the key for me is that the police decided to approach the very first vigil in this militarized gear, in this very aggressive stance. And I think that they actually caused all of this, all of these nights of mayhem or whatever you want to call it.
I absolutely agree.
Now, let's shift to what's really important here. We have an 18-year-old man who was shot dead. There are three eyewitnesses, I believe we're up to three, who say that Brown was trying to pull away from a police officer who was inside his car, had grabbed Brown's shirt when the officer shot him. He then ran and was shot again as he ran. He turned around, raised his hands, and was shot several more times. That's what three eyewitnesses have said. The police have a different version. They said it was a routine stop at some point. Colin Reichman, actually, the managing editor of the Missouri Times, he tweeted that the chief of the Ferguson Police Department had specifically said that Brown wasn't stopped as part of a criminal investigation. That tune changed today. Elon, did you catch the first press conference this morning where they named the officer responsible for Brown's death?
I did.
So tell us about this new twist that was introduced into the story.
I was about to say I could tell you it, but I'm not sure why am I just spreading outright slander of a young man, because that's what it was. They started making the argument that there had been a robbery earlier and he fit the description, which, as a Negro, I'm going to tell you, that's what we hear all the time. We always fit the description. Like, if God forbid a black person does something, then we all did it. And this is something that's not even just a cop thing. I make jokes about this all the time, even within supposedly progressive liberal spaces. If I tell you how many times I've been called Baratunde Thurston, so. I mean it's been bad. Like if I host a keynote, then people will talk about how funny Baratunde Thurston is. One woman rolled up on me, told me that she knew me by a different name. I jokingly said Baratunde, and she said, "Yeah, that's what I know you by." And then when I looked at her weird, she goes, "So what's up with having like two names, the whole Elon and Baratunde thing?" And I had to tell her I'm a different human being, and we look nothing alike. So that's just step one. When they make this argument about the idea that he fit the description, it's so cliched amongst communities of color that I'm not even sure how to reasonably respond to it without laughing.
So, well, all right, but let's talk about what they did, though. So they have this press conference. They're going to release the identity of the police officer.
Correct.
And instead of releasing, so, and let's just talk about what they said. They started to talk about, they identified the police officer, a six-year veteran. They didn't give many details beyond that. And then they started to talk about this strong arm robbery that was done nearby. And it's remarkable. The family says that it was a selective release, and they're outraged by that. And do you know what they mean by selective release?
I do not.
So there's no incident report of the shooting. They released a 16-page report about a strong-armed robbery nearby. They did not release anything about the shooting. Now, they've also done an autopsy on Michael Brown's body, and they have not released any of the results from the autopsy, and they have not told the public how many times he was shot. So they're putting out this very detailed account of a strong-armed robbery nearby, and basically poisoning the well. I have to say that I think that the media has bought this, the idea that this is a significant part of the story, hook, line, and sinker. The cable nets are replaying this video, the surveillance video, in the store of the robbery of some cigars again and again and again, like on a permanent loop.
As if the robbery of cigars equals is a legitimate reason to execute someone.
Well, I mean, this is the really, really key point, right? We have this strong-armed robbery. Brown is the prime suspect, and this has absolutely nothing to do with this story. It's completely irrelevant. Police are not allowed to go around shooting people for petty theft. The only question is whether or not Brown posed a threat to the officer or other people, innocent people, when he was shot. That's when a police officer is allowed to kill somebody. And nothing about this robbery changes the fact that multiple eyewitnesses say that he was running or in the process of surrendering when he was killed. And that could be confirmed by the autopsy report, which they are not releasing.
And also, remember, sir, we're black. We are automatically threatening everyone around us. So I said this immediately when people were talking about this. They started saying that the framing by some folks who are very angry and frustrated, and I understand it, is that he just wanted to kill a black man. I don't know why that's okay. And I said, I don't think that's what happened. I personally believe that the cop felt threatened. But what he felt and what reality is two very different things. And as someone who is considered a white Negro myself, I know how people react to me when I'm around them or if I'm walking towards them. And it has nothing to do with what I'm doing, what I'm saying, how I'm acting, what I'm wearing, nothing. It's just the fact that I'm a large Negro, and so that's that. And so I believe that the argument would be made that they're terrified. They're absolutely terrified of the gentle giant, as he's referred to by the community and his family, and that is their legitimate reason to execute him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds right. I also think that it seems likely that he did, in fact, steal those cigars because the witness, one of the eyewitnesses, was a man named Dorian Johnson. He was one of the witnesses that say that he was with Brown the entire time. He was the one who said that the police officer had shot his friend down in cold blood like, quote, a dog. And he was also wanted for this theft, allegedly. So it seems odd. There's many things that don't fit the narrative that we're giving.
And flat out, one, they are not arresting the young man that that supposedly was around there. And I believe that this is a complete just they're alleging something. There is no actual proof. We don't know. There's a grainy video stills and tape, and that we don't know, and we can't truly see. And they're wearing different clothing than what he was killed in, and what he was supposedly robbed the place in.
Elon, you know, this is a breaking story. There's stuff coming in very quickly. Dorian Johnson's lawyer said that Dorian Johnson says that they did, in fact, steal those cigars. So at this point, and, you know, it is all alleged at this point, but I think that it's the fact that Dorian Johnson is admitting that through his lawyer suggests that that is a likely scenario. But the question is, but that doesn't answer so many other questions.
It doesn't at all. And I'm now looking this up because I've been watching this. I have not, that was not something that came in on my feed yet.
I'll tweet you the link. You the link momentarily. But so we first heard that the police officer gave them a hard time for jaywalking.
Right.
Not because he thought that they had committed a crime. Right. They did not arrest Dorian Johnson, who is also wanted for this alleged shoplifting. By the way, they should call it shoplifting, not strong arm robbery. I saw the surveillance video. It's the so-called strong arm was that the person who looks like the person who is alleged to be Brown gives the clerk a very small shove as he's walking out. But all of these things, you know, don't add up. They didn't even interview Dorian Johnson, who's supposedly wanted for this crime and is an eyewitness to the shooting, until Wednesday, 5 days after the shooting. This despite the fact that he was speaking to the media. There's also an issue of timing, right? So if you are doing an investigative stop, how is it that there is only 3 minutes that passes between the very first contact and Brown lying dead in the street and the second police car arriving? The more questions they answer, so-called questions they answer, I think the more questions that they're raising. The whole thing just does not make any sense. And of course, this is a trial by media of this 18-year-old kid who was supposed to start college this week, who was allegedly gunned down in the middle of the street. And let me ask you this. It seems like this was all a very inept attempt at character assassination.
Yes, the feed that I am looking at the police chief specifically is saying that that the officer had no clue whatsoever that there was a robbery or anything. So if they knew that, then I mean, come on, if they knew for a fact. Like I'm seeing breaking news from various places. Chief didn't know Michael Brown was a suspect in the robbery when stopped for walking in the street blocking traffic. And so now they put him out as someone who is apparently a criminal, so that they're basically the idea of him being murdered is irrelevant because he's a criminal.
Well, that's right. I mean, it's a clear case of poisoning the well. We've seen right wingers circulating a Facebook picture of a young black man who looks somewhat like Michael Brown, but is not Michael Brown holding a gun. These things are kind of par for the course. It just seems like these are flailing attempts at damage control. Let me ask you a final question before I let you go, Elon. You've been down in Ferguson for a couple of days. You've talked to the people down there. Give us a sense of the context. Before this incident, what was the relationship between the community and this police force, which is made up of almost all white men? I believe it was 51 out of 53 officers in the Ferguson Police Department are white, and 2/3 of the population of Ferguson are black.
Well, that's been something that we've been covering specifically, and apparently this has been an issue for a while. So one person we spoke with literally said that as tragic and horrible as this was, and they weren't happy about this, they were happy that the attention is being shown shined on St. Louis in general because of the fact that the way they described it was that the civil rights movement missed St. Louis. And that there's been a lot of issues around this, and there's been a lot of problems, and with how the people were kicked out of their homes and then moved into different spaces, and Section 8 areas were moved further into spaces like Ferguson and things like that, and that there's been ongoing issues with this, and that this just happens to be the thing that finally got people to start paying attention to what's happening here.
There was a story today, I believe in the Daily Beast, about a man in 2009, he got off at the wrong exit, and he had the same name, a very common name, as somebody who was wanted for some offense, and the Ferguson Police Department detained him, didn't say anything, they just arrested him, beat the crap out of him, and then charged him with destroying police property because he got his blood on their uniforms.
Yeah, I've been hearing about that. I heard the story. I didn't actually get a chance to go look at it myself, but it was my team brought it to me. And in my mind, literally, when it was brought to me, I said no. I'm not. That doesn't even seem reasonable. That sounds like something that like made up or urban legend just to make to paint the picture of this racist space, because it sounded so insane and so mad. And they'd be like, dude, it was like it was reported by Daily Beast. I don't think this is being made up. And no, there's been a problem. When we talked to folks on the ground, they said that there's been issues for quite some time, and this just happens to be the thing that where they were tired of it. They were tired of how they're being treated by the police officers, by the department. And the fact is, if nothing else, we saw what happened with how the police were there and the police weren't. And I think that's a very, very striking thing that you have to look at and understand how people are interacting, engaging with the police department, because they are in fact looked at as flat out the enemy, and the fact is they treated the people of Ferguson like they were the enemy.
Elon James White, I think we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us from Ferguson today.
Not a problem, sir.
Folks, we've done Elon a bit of an injustice. He's one of the funniest guys around. We had him on to discuss a topic that is not at all humorous. Hey, Elon, let's get you back sometime to have some laughs over stupid racists or something like that.
I'm sure it'll happen.
Folks, stay tuned. We will have some laughs next with Dr. Zoom from Juan Kett. Stay tuned.
Chicken.
Welcome back to the show. I'm still Joshua Holland. This is Politics and Reality Radio. Folks, things are moving really quickly with the story out of Ferguson. As you know, we're taping the show on Friday, August 15th. As soon as I finished that last segment with Elon James White, Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson told reporters in no uncertain terms that the incident in which Michael Brown was killed began because Brown was jaywalking and it had nothing to do with the alleged shoplifting of some cigars. He said that the officer, Officer Wilson, had no idea that Brown was wanted in connection with the theft. He also said that Dorian Johnson wasn't wanted for the theft, but it says right there in the police report released this morning that he was. So after all this drama about the shoplifting, we still have a scenario that begins with this idiotic broken windows theory of policing, with police hassling people over petty nonsense like walking in the street. And we still see a police department that keep saying things that just don't add up. Anyway, I am joined now by Dr. Zoom from Wonkette, and I'm kind of excited about it because I'm a big fan. Doc Zoom, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's great to be with you.
Now, you use a pseudonym because you live in some godforsaken hellhole in flyover country, right, and don't want the neighbors to know who you are?
Actually, I use a pseudonym out of habit more than anything else. I originally started posting on Wonkette as Dr. Zoom because it was a nickname I got at a job when I was differently punctual to a lot of team meetings. And that's how I was known on the blog, and so I just went with that. But it is a useful thing for living in Idaho, I suppose.
Now, have you ever seen such a clumsy attempt to attack the character of a dead black kid?
Oh, my God. We wrote about that today, and I'm sure that we'll keep writing about it. It's frankly just been taking up everything. It even bled over into a story that I wrote today about a perfectly ordinary Wonkette story about a woman who got arrested for saying f*** in front of her children. Can I say that on the radio? You can bleep me.
I'll bleep you.
Okay. A woman who said that word in front of her children and was arrested for disturbing the peace.
Yeah, and that was a weird story. Was that in a Walmart or something like that?
Yeah, it was in South Carolina in a Kroger's. And a woman was having a bad day and complained to a cop, and the cop went and arrested the woman for disorderly conduct. And so I just kind of figured that, really it's a good thing that the officer showed some restraint and didn't shoot both of them.
Yeah, right. Now, I got to tell you, when I read that story, I was a little bit dubious because I was like, I feel like there might be more to this particular story.
Oh, we linked to the police report.
Oh, okay. All right. So he actually thought to take her in and charge her with this. And this is like the South Carolina law, right, where saying obscenities in a public place is considered a form of disorderly conduct.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. As it should be.
Yeah, well, sure. Of course, you're going to be charged for that F-bomb that you dropped on my show.
Well, there we go. Again, as it should be. If you're going to have laws like that, by golly, you better enforce them.
Now, how are conservatives taking all of this stuff going on down in Ferguson? I assume that they're deeply concerned about overarching government and the tyranny, yes?
They're really worried about the whole tyranny thing, is my understanding of it. I've been paying a lot of attention to one of our favorite people, the stupidest man on the internet, Jim Hoft, who writes the Gateway Pundit blog. And he yesterday had a fantastic story explaining that oh heavens, blanking on his name because I've only been writing it all day. Mr. Brown.
Michael Brown.
Michael
yes.
Brown. Good heavens. I only wrote it 47 times in the last hour.
I've done that too, yeah.
Michael Brown was definitely a gangster because there are photos of him online throwing gang signs.
Yeah, well, there's also photos of other young black men that kind of vaguely resemble him, huh?
Well, yeah, exactly. And one of those made it into a revised version of the article and then came out again.
That's him with a gun, but it was just some other random person on Facebook.
Precisely, precisely. Yep.
Now, you call Jim Hoff the stupidest man on the internet. Can we say he's the stupidest person on the internet, or are you saving that for Victoria Jackson?
Well, I am a big fan of hers. She's a favorite. I wouldn't ever call her stupid. I'd just call her interesting.
She's special.
She is. She is a very special friend of Wonkit. She is a frenemy. She has noticed that we write about her, and once or twice she even acknowledged that we were accurate, but wrong.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. That was nice. That was very kind of her.
How does Jim Hoff blame Obama for what's going on in Ferguson?
Oh, of course. Yesterday he had a column about the speech that Obama gave, saying Obama gives speech saying we're all one American family, and then in parentheses followed that with, if they bring a knife, you bring a gun. Because, of course, Barack Obama once saw the Untouchables, and everything that he says is a literal call for violence. There are no metaphors in Jim Hoff's mind.
Well, I mean, the whole thing with Obama is either he's a weak-kneed, granny-pants-wearing, wuss, or, you know, history's greatest monster, one of the two.
The wimpiest tyrant that we've ever had.
That's right. It's funny because, I was reading that post, and I was just struck by the fact that I had actually had, I wouldn't say an argument, a little Twitter debate with somebody where I was saying that I thought that Obama's statement about what's going on down in Ferguson was extremely tame, and I think I called it tepid. And this person said, well, you know, he doesn't want to politicize it, and he doesn't want to get the right to think about it in partisan terms. But it doesn't really matter what he says. I mean,
oh, of course not. Of course not. We occasionally fantasize that maybe Obama will come out in favor of breathing a combination of oxygen and nitrogen, and then conservatives will say, oh, yeah? So.
Now, what about the new Black Panthers, Larry, Moe, and Jamal? How afraid should we be of their involvement in these protests?
Oh, I think we should be terrified that somebody who has an organization and wants to sound scary has put out some press releases talking about how their thousands of followers are going to rise up and bring justice in the form of a flaming pillar of fire or something like that. And of course, if they say that, then it must be absolutely true.
I mean, this was on Fox. So Dr. Zoom did a post this week about Fox's dealing with the happenings in Ferguson. And of course, their focus was very selective. Some new Black Panther. I mean, they've been on the new Black Panther beat for literally years, since the 2008 elections, when they ran endless string of segments about some dude. Yeah, two guys outside of a polling place in Philadelphia. And those two guys are the new Black Panthers. I think there's 11 of them.
There might be that many. There might be. And the FBI actually did say that one new Black Panther was in the St. Louis area. And considering that they do have the superpowers of the X-Men, that one new Black Panther could in fact be an army by himself.
It's the magic Negro power. So if Obama has those magic Negro powers, he's the dark side.
It possibly could be. But again, remember, he is the most weak need of the Magneto threats to humanity.
Right. Yeah. Let's shift gears. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Doc Zoom from Wonkit. Now, the Republican National Committee has its collective panties in a bunch. Is that sexist for me to say?
Probably, but go ahead.
Okay. Do you want to call me out?
No.
Okay. So they have their something in a wad. this week because the AP put out a, there's an AP history exam. It's the College Board that puts these out, and they're not happy. Why does the College Board hate America so much? What's the story here?
Well, the story is that the College Board put out a new version of the AP history exam that, according to the RNC and certain of the more excitable people in the education is bad for you crowd, is going to make children not love America enough.
Will because they love another country?
Well, I'm not
like
sure.
Like France?
That could be it. Yes, they'll probably become French and then start eating baguettes. The worst thing about these history standards, or not standards, but the new AP history framework for their test, is, according to these guys, that it doesn't give enough credit to the Founding Fathers or to the role of religion. And the College Board, of course, released a sample test where the first reading, in fact, is an excerpt from Benjamin Franklin talking about seeing a preacher who had done immeasurable good for the people by bringing them to God. So the other thing is that it said unkind things about the motives of the settlers from the 17th century all the way through the 19th century.
Oh, no.
I know, as if they were motivated by a sense of white superiority or something.
Damn.
Which, of course, is impossible. They simply wanted to bring democracy to the land.
Well, I mean, the Founding Fathers, they rode in on their dinosaurs and they freed the slaves, right?
Something like that. Well, actually, they wanted to build a city on the hill just as soon as they got the Indians who were living off the hill out of there and brought in some Africans to do the construction.
To actually build the city on the hill. What about Paul Revere ringing the bells and firing the warning shots to tell the British that we were keeping our arms? Did they include that?
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells that we were going to be secure and we were going to be free.
That was not actually mentioned, and now I kind of feel bad for not mentioning it in the column.
It seems like maybe they have a case. If they didn't mention that, I mean, that's a pretty crucial moment. And the thing that I found interesting about the original story, not your column, they bitched about the textbook omitting many things that are included in the Texas school book standards, which if you follow that whole story...
Right, which were revised to get rid of Jefferson.
That's right. Right, he's not a real founding father.
Too much of an atheist for them.
Too much of an atheist. I mean, the Texas school book standards are like Conservapedia.
Mm-hmm. On a good day.
All right, let me ask you this. How is mean old Jimmy Carter oppressing Jim Hoff again? Because he could be really mean.
Oh, I don't know that he's oppressing Jim Hoff, but he is saying that people who think that who are skeptical of global warming are nutcases.
Yeah, no, I meant Jim Inhofe, James Inhofe.
Jim Inhofe.
Oklahoma Senator, who has, by the way, been called the stupidest man in the Senate.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised. He, but with all that competition, it's hard to say.
You know, I think that you have to distinguish between the Senate and the House here, right?
Because that's true. That's true for that's true for the Senate. Inhofe may be the tops. Yeah.
I mean, you know, you have very fierce competition in the House.
Oh, the House, it's almost, there's too many to even crown a champion.
You know, I like Louis
Gohmert.
Everybody
Gohmert. Gets a medal there.
Yeah, I like Louis Gohmert for it.
Mm-hmm. He's not bad. He's not bad. Last year, let's see, who did we give our legislative, I have to say that word again.
Don't use that word. Nozzle.
Our legislative
F-nozzle.
Blank muffin of the year.
Right.
Ted Cruz, but Gohmert was definitely a strong finisher, and so this year it'll be interesting to see who's coming up in that.
Now, Doc, you've spent the past, I don't know, months, years, the series seems a little interminable, dissecting these Christian homeschooling textbooks. What are they called?
I call the series Sundays with the Christianists, and these are the folks who are maybe not so Christian as they are Christianist, like Islam is to Islamists. And These are the right-wing textbooks that are published by various producers for both the Christian school and the homeschool market. And they usually stick to a pretty strict fundamentalist set of guidelines, pointing out that evolution is absolutely untrue. And in fact, in American history, evolution is a devastating force because it has led our people to lose their greatness. There's a lot of spiritual rot in these books.
And how is the mechanism, how does that mechanism work? Is it that the evolution brings us the relativism, which mars...
That's part of it. It's the big problem with evolution is that it says that we came from something other than God, and that if the book of Genesis isn't literally true, then other parts of the Bible might not be true, and how can you believe anything? Again, it's just this utter unwillingness to think that metaphor might have value, even in a religious context.
All right, let me ask you this, Mr. Smarty Pants Liberal. Oh. If we came from monkeys, why are there still monkeys?
Precisely. You came from your grandparents. Why are your grandparents still alive?
Oh, God, I love evolutionists.
Yeah.
I love creationists.
Well, the other problem with evolution, of course, is that if we evolved, then we are mere animals, and nobody can tell us that there are any absolutes out there. And so we're going to just start raping and pillaging at the drop of a hat.
But what if we're intelligently designed?
If we're intelligently designed, then we are also created, because intelligent design is, and they've always foul up and admit it,
intelligent design
is creationism.
I mean, this is actually a hilarious point, is that they say they do try to kind of couch it in scientific trappings.
Well, they try so hard, and then their followers get it all wrong.
Yeah,
well,
I believe in
intelligent design because Jesus's tomb is empty and Charles Darwin is in his.
Now, what were these books takes? So these are history books. What were their takes on the Civil War? Was that Northern aggression or
the Civil War? They don't actually call it the War of Northern Aggression, but although the phrase did get mentioned as one of the examples of why it's such a contentious thing. But yes, both of the American history books that I've looked at in the last year were published in the South, one at Pensacola Christian College and the other at Bob Jones University. And so they definitely take a pro-Southern point of view and explain that it wasn't just about slavery. It was about many other things as well. In fact, one of the books, which is designed for eighth graders, so I can see why they might want to simplify things a bit, didn't really talk about causes much at all. When it got to the Civil War, it simply went into dates and names mode.
You know, how many kids read these books? Do you know how widely distributed they are?
I really have no idea. They're obviously doing well enough to keep several publishing houses going.
Yeah, right.
And I've been interested in this stuff since the 1980s when I did a brief visit to a Christian school that used something called ACE, Accelerated Christian Education. And I was just astonished by some of the stuff that the kids were reading, including a categorization of things as either fact or opinion. Based on these standards, something is a fact if it's verifiable or if it's in the Bible, and something is an opinion if it's something that people can reasonably disagree about without ever proving by evidence, or if it's something that humans came up with to explain God's mysteries.
Yes. Okay, I gotcha. It's interesting. There was a story just maybe the week before last of a couple, I want to say they were in Texas, but don't quote me on that. And they got in trouble because they were not teaching their homeschooling children.
Yes.
They were in Texas. Mm-hmm. And why didn't they teach their homeschooled children?
Well, they took their children out of school in, I think, 2004, 2006, something like that. And because they were expecting the rapture any moment. And they didn't actually teach them anything other than reading the Bible and singing hymns, because they were going to be raptured any moment, and why would they need all of that government-mandated history and math and other stuff?
I think, will give them points for logical consistency.
Well, yes. Yeah. So it seems like a perfectly reasonable thing to do if you're expecting to be picked up any minute. But after 10 years, you'd think they'd start wondering, well, gosh, they're adults now and they don't know how to do math or balance a checkbook or anything. Not that anyone balances a checkbook anymore.
No, you've dated yourself. Age. You sure have.
Yep.
So how did these books...
Right, let's talk about the Nixon administration.
How did these books cover the Clinton administration without including, you know, dirty things that even married couples really should avoid because of, you know, no procreation?
They were very careful about that. They mention that there was marital infidelity, but they don't go into any great detail. They got through the entire Lewinsky scandal by focusing on Bill Clinton having lied. And there's no mention of a blue dress or anything like that. That's just, no, you don't want to go there.
Did they cover the kind of encyclopedic faux scandals, like post office gate or whatever, mail, all those crazy...
They didn't really go into all that, although they did mention Whitewater very, very seriously, and one of them thought that it was very suspicious that Bill Clinton was the only person who wasn't prosecuted.
Interesting. So they didn't actually go too hard against the Clintons, it sounds like.
They could have gone harder. I mean, I was surprised that they didn't suggest that Hillary had secretly killed Vince Foster. They didn't go
that
off
kind of thing
into the completely goofy stuff. They were more just merely standard right-wing conservative talking points rather than complete wing nuts. That's one thing that I occasionally had to found myself defending a couple of the, especially the Bob Jones textbook. It's not as bad as it could be.
Right.
That's
okay.
A very strange defense to make. But, for instance, the Bob Jones textbook had been depicted in Mother Jones as making excuses for the Klan. But what they were actually doing was they were saying that the Klan had tried to present itself as a group of civic-minded people who were going to clean up government, when in fact they were actually not doing that. But Mother Jones only quoted the part about them presenting themselves as civic-minded do-gooders.
Yeah, and I mean, it is true that that's how they presented themselves.
On the other hand, they're far too soft on the Klan. It was still awful. It's just not as awful as sometimes it gets depicted. So for what it's worth, the Bob Jones textbook did have its moments and is generally historically accurate, although occasionally a little weird, like in the very last chapter where it says that an example of great Christian faith among America's leaders was the George Washington and the soldiers at Valley Forge and their faith that kept them going, and Stonewall Jackson, who prayed before every battle and made sure that his men had access to ministers.
Right, before ordering them to kill children. So the favorite piece of these Christianist history books, your favorite, what was it?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. I think my favorite actually was the Christian sex ed books. Those were kind of fun. There was one that was almost liberal in its views on a couple of things, like it even suggested that like masturbation might be okay, but then the other one was just completely nuts and would go off into these strange digressions about how girls who paint themselves up like savages are just asking for trouble.
Well, that's true. So Doc, before I let you go, let me just ask you about the process at Wonkette. How does Rebecca get everyone to write like her? I mean, are there punishments for not writing ass?
I think that there are. It's probably just something that we internalize. It's a matter of many of us have. I started as a reader of Wonkette, and so picking up the house style was really quite easy.
But I find myself saying sports ball.
Sports ball is a favorite, and a idiot is another. And we are eventually going to crowdsource a wiki so that people can make sense of all the stupid inside jokes.
Did you hear that the Oxford English Dictionary added side boob today?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Now I have something to write about for the weekend.
So I believe I can say that on the air.
That is actually, I think that you, not only can you, I think you must.
I think I did.
Yeah. Now all we need for the perfect Wonkat story is to add a story about, add in an alligator, a stripper pole, some drugs, and side boob.
Now, how do you guys come up with what you're going to write, or how do you divvy up the huge pot of stupid that's served to you by America every day?
It can be hard. There's some days there's just, you know, Louis Gohmert opens his mouth more than twice, and so we're just flooded with stories. And then other days it seems like there's just nothing funny out there. So it's mostly a matter of when we're in the secret chat cave, which is our online chat app, we just pitch stories and decide, well, yeah, that's funny. We should do that.
And whatever Kylie wants, you give it to her, right?
And whatever Kylie wants,
you're
she
scared.
Gets.
Yeah. Okay, I understand.
She needs to be mad at things. So yeah.
Yes. Well, she's good at that. Doc Zoom, I believe we are out of time. I can't thank you enough for taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you. This was fun.
Folks, read Doc Zoom at Wonkette.com. Follow him on Twitter at Dr. Zoom. There's a K in there, like doctor in German. I'd also like to thank Elon James White. You can follow me on Twitter at Joshua Hall. You can read my stuff at BillMoyers.com. You can send an email complaining about the show to politicsandreality@gmail.com. Of course, I want to thank all of you for tuning in. Have a great week.
Matar o seu coração. Água de beber, água de beber, camarada. Água de beber, água de beber, camarada. Tem batunda, bater lá da badaba. Tem batunda, bater lá da badaba. Tem batunda.